Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently. Greg is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have the Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready. Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Go, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception Perception, the show. Matt, how are you doing today, pal?
Doing good, man. We're in full off-season mode. We had the combine over the weekend.
That was exciting.
A lot of interesting performances coming out of that. You know, we've got franchise tag deadlines, free agent news. I've got free agent profiles up on the website. Even started charting our first rookie for the 2023 NFL draft wide receiver crop. So full-blown off-season mode, man. A lot going on.
Watch out. We've obviously got a lot on the table here, but I think the big news, at least in our world anyways, is that Matt Harmon did a data drop for all of our Reception Perception subscribers. If you guys are not familiar with his work, well, listen, you got to go to the website, receptionperception.com.
How did you get here?
It's a little something called Feed Drops, Matt. Our partners over at Odyssey do an amazing job. Shout out to Odyssey for doing an amazing job getting our stuff out to various markets that maybe, again, new to your product. But anyways, a data drop on the website. That's like, it's a little bit like early Christmas, honestly, man. I love going through that, finding all the data. And we're going to be digging into some of the stuff that you found. We're going to talk about Calvin Ridley, Chris Olave, Michael Thomas. We're going to do a whole Saints breakdown here, okay? Talk about the best free agent, wide receiver, in many people's opinions, on the market in Jacoby Myers. And DJ Chark will most likely also be a free agent. What does he bring to the table? And maybe what does he not bring to the table? Some surprising findings in regards to DJ Chark. But honestly, today, Matt, I think was a little bit of a, I don't know, man. It was like a QB mayhem. You know, Geno Smith, Daniel Jones, Derek Carr, Lamar Jackson, Tom Brady. What? Come on now. A lot of quarterback news circulating out there. We'll start with just some of the details in regards to Geno Smith and Daniel Jones. But 3 years, 105 for Geno Smith, more like a two-year, 60 kind of deal for Geno. But Derek Carr got 4 years and 150. Again, who knows? It's more of like a two- or three-year deal. Daniel Jones, a four-year, 160. So he ended up, his representatives ended up working the Giants over, I think, a little bit. They wanted 40 a year, and they got it. I don't know how much of that is backloaded, how much of it is front-loaded, but at least on paper, the agents got what they wanted to get, which is a $40 million a year average annual salary for Daniel Jones. Meanwhile, Lamar Jackson, this one's an interesting one, Matt. The Baltimore Ravens playing a little gamesmanship, I think, with their quarterback in Lamar Jackson. They put a non-exclusive franchise tag on Lamar, meaning any team, he can go and negotiate with any team, Matt Harmon. And if the team and Lamar reach an agreement, Baltimore has the rights to either match, or if they don't match, they would get two first round picks back. That, if you ask me, severely handicaps the negotiating process, right? Because a team not only would have to commit big money to Lamar Jackson, but then also commit two first round draft picks as well. That's a steep price to pay.
Yeah, but like in the grand scheme of things, you know, Lamar getting traded for two first round picks is like kind of a steal. You know, like I think look at what Russell Wilson fetched last year. And Russell Wilson was in his 30s. Obviously, we know what happened with Russ, but even think about before that, you know, Russ was in his 30s. He never won an MVP. Lamar Jackson has won an MVP. So I think if like in an all things equal universe, like Lamar Jackson is worth more in a trade than just two first round picks. But the interesting part of this is that as soon as they hit Lamar with the non-exclusive franchise tag, which,
right,
as you said, then frees him up to go and negotiate with, like, get an offer from another team. By the way, apparently it's been an annoying and frustrating process. And by the way, I am not here to, like, cape up for Big Agent. I'm not, you know, these, like, sites that are, you know, the biggest problem here is Lamar doesn't have an agent. If he had an agent, none of this would be happening. Like, because I don't talk to agents. I'm not a source guy. I'm not beholden to agents. I don't care. I'm not saying because of that. But everybody has said that it's been a frustrating process to negotiate with Lamar Jackson, because it's not like when you have an agent, your agent goes back and forth with the team. There's no, like, mm-hmm. personal, you get hard feelings with the player. And, you know, I've also heard other insiders have said that, like, you know, Lamar is a little bit more like Jeff Zrebeck. I was listening to him talk about this. He covers the Ravens for The Athletic, has covered the team for a long time. He's just not like he just kind of marches to the beat of his own drum, basically, in terms of the whole negotiation process. So it'd be a little tough, by the way, for Lamar to then go negotiate with all these other teams if he's this tough to negotiate with his own team. But be that as it may, as soon as all this stuff like breaks that he's going to get the non-exclusive franchise tag, all of these teams immediately leaked that they're not interested.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I think the Panthers, the Falcons, the freaking Panthers have been linked to every reasonable starting level quarterback
over the last three years. Come on, bro.
They're not interested in Lamar Jackson. The Dolphins, they were leaked. The Commanders, the Raiders.
Yeah.
This all comes back to the guaranteed contract, James, does it not? And you know, like what the Browns did with Deshaun Watson. And I mean, Steve Bisciotti himself, the Ravens owner, was one of the most publicly frustrated owners about that, knowing that he had Lamar's deal coming up on the deck. It kind of feels like all the owners are sort of like, you could say, colluding to basically push back on this entire idea that guaranteed contracts for quarterbacks is not going to be a thing.
Well, I think it's I think there's definitely some, and again, people don't want to hear collusion, okay, but I think it's at least on the table, because again, as you mentioned, if he was working with an agent, and again, I'm not a big fan of agents either, but it's just like, look, if he was working with a big time agent, that agent's got some pull, right? And it says, hey, if you guys are going to pull this shady stuff, well, I mean, when my other clients' contracts come up, we may want to play a little bit more hardball, you know, like there's a little bit more leverage when we're talking about big time agents and big time agencies. If they were representing Lamar, it's a little bit easier, I think, for these teams to basically have these, you know, backdoor deals with each other saying, well, I don't want to give a fully guaranteed do you want to give a fully guaranteed? Because I don't want to give you know what I mean? Like, it's a little bit easier for these teams to do that because Lamar's only representing himself and the trickle-down effect is not very severe. That being said, Matt, I would love to see him go to Miami. I mean, can you just think about the speed? Oh my gosh, think about the speed with Lamar Jackson, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle just running around. Are you kidding me? That would be so fun.
Now, the Dolphins don't have a first round pick this year because it was forfeited in the whole collusion. Ironically enough, was forfeited in the whole collusion thing from last year with Brady and Sean Payton and all that stuff. So they can't match. They can't give him an offer that then they would forfeit two first round picks. They could do it after the draft though, because it has to be a first round pick from the next two drafts, basically. So if they did it after the draft, if like Lamar leaves this franchise tag unsigned, whatever, and kicks this down the road, and theoretically that could happen, right?
Oh, for sure.
But the Dolphins are one of the few teams that can afford him, and I think this is the thing that is going to get lost. And you know, I'm not here to raise your sympathy levels for billionaire NFL owners or anything like that, and the lack of cash that they may have. But I think what a lot of fans forget is this is not about like the salary cap. This is not about like fitting him onto your football books. Like the actual owner has to have the cash to be able to put in escrow to give these guys guaranteed deals. Jimmy Haslam, you know, of the Browns is absurdly rich. You know, like he can put $230 million guaranteed, can put all of that money into an account that is going to go to Deshaun Watson no matter what. How many other NFL owners, James, actually have like $230+ million? Now it'd be more than $230 million if he wants the Deshaun deal. Plus, how many NFL owners can, I mean, because the Raiders, like they were immediately ruled out because we know the Raiders can't afford that. Mark Davis can't afford that. But like, I mean, David Tepper, Panthers probably could afford it. Stephen Ross, Miami, maybe could afford it. But like, I think it's interesting that I think what a lot of these owners are worried about, and again, it sounds stupid because these guys are worth so much money, but like that certain teams are just going to get completely priced out of high-end quarter. Like Mike Brown, the Bengals, they have to, I mean, you know, the Bengals aren't one of the most wealthiest teams ever. They got to be like, you know, pissing their pants that if this whole guaranteed contract thing becomes the norm, they got Burrow and they got Chase and they got Higgins coming up. I mean, Mike Brown, he's going to be having to work a night shift at the Taco Bell down the street, or he's going to have to get his kids to be Uber drivers or something to put a little extra into escrow.
That's it. Oh my God. I can't believe we're getting to the financials here, but no, listen, a lot of these guys are super wealthy and rich, and obviously they're billionaires, but it's like, it's kind of like being like house rich and cash poor. You know what I mean? Like a lot of their value is tied up into their franchises. I mean, David Tepper's an exception. You know, there are certain guys that are exceptions, you know, but Tepper's individually wealthy. Right. But you're right. In terms of the signing bonuses, the actual guaranteed amounts, needs to be put in escrow, right? Because again, it's guaranteed, right? So it's not, but you would think, and obviously a quarterback's guaranteed amount uses up a lot of the guaranteed money that is being laid out in escrow, but it's not all of it, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah.
I find it difficult to believe that if, for example, like Lamar wanted $250 million guaranteed. Like, I find it really difficult to believe that these guys would not be able to pony up and put that away. It would hurt them in other areas, and they would not be able to then guarantee a lot of other contracts. I understand that.
Yeah.
But again, if you're getting Lamar and you're a quarterback away, I think the Dolphins are a quarterback away. I mean, you know, what are we really talking about here? You know, so I don't know. It's fascinating. The things
gotta
that happen.
A few of your yachts and your rental properties and your various other things to get some cash instead of just assets.
Come on, bro. Come on, man. Like, let's free up some cash. It's all good. You know, golly, I got to pay some taxes. I got to free up some cash. You know, it's like, come on. This is the game that we play here. All right.
This is
golly.
It. NFL owners, just like
anyways.
Us.
Just like, no, not at all. But yeah, no, again, I'd love to see, you know, all money aside, I'd love to see Lamar Jackson end up in Miami just because I think it'd be so fun and what an absolute nightmare it would be. Can you imagine what the coaching staff, like how much fun they would have just conceptualizing plays with Lamar, Cheetah, and Jalen Waddle? Like, oh my God, that'd be a lot of fun. Meanwhile, even though they got banged and with collusion, Miami linked with Tom Brady as well, with the latest Tom Brady rumors, Tom Brady talking about, you don't know how much time a baby cat is using in my life, and Rich Eisen going on his show saying he's heard some rumors. And you know, to be honest with you, it does add up, doesn't it? I mean, Tom Brady finding himself two great receivers in Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. That kind of stuff does line up a little bit if Tom Brady does want to return.
I mean, enough already with Tom Brady. Come on. I don't need to see Tom Brady, who, you know, I just put up Mike Evans' reception profile on the site because the free agent class is so boring. I've been putting guys up who might get traded. You know, I don't know that Evans is necessarily going to get traded, but, I decided to do him, and he might just in case, you know, guys like DeAndre Hopkins up there as well. But, Brandon Cook's coming later. I don't need to see, Tom Brady getting rid of the ball in 2 seconds before Tyreek Hill's like fully out of his out on his go route. You know, I saw enough of that with Mike Evans last year. Now I know two different kinds of players. I get right. that, but I don't. The Tom Brady stuff, man, come on. I mean, it'd just be hilarious if the Dolphins, you know, they get in trouble for colluding and they actually end up with Brady. That would be that would be pretty ridiculous. The Lamar thing is really fascinating too. I mean, if you're right, if he was there, that would be, I mean, just the complete opposite of Brady, obviously, because of the mobility. And it just, look at what the Eagles put teams in a bind last year with, like, if you have a great run, like, we have a great run game, but you can't put an eighth man in the box because we have two great wide receivers. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, our quarterback is mobile too. So if you really focus on the run game or you focus on these receivers, you're not getting a guy out that's going to spy the quarterback. He can tread you. Obviously the Dolphins would then present that with Lamar Jackson, but yeah, right. Man, I mean the Brady stuff, he looks like he's got both of his cheeks scooped out of his face. I love Brady. I love what he's brought to the game, but I've seen enough. I've seen it, especially after going back and watching the Bucs film last year. I know it's not all Tom Brady's fault, but like, yeah, he can come back and be the 15th best quarterback in the league. I know that Tua's got concussion concerns and all that. I mean, Tua can be he was more than the 15th best quarterback in the league last year when he was playing. I get that they're probably, in looking for alternatives. You're scrunching your face over there on the other side of it. But I mean, Tua can be the 15th best quarterback in the league.
He could. I mean, he could. I mean,
when he played last year, he was better than the 15th best quarterback in the league. He was like the most efficient quarterback in the league.
No, I know everyone points to the numbers and say, oh, look at the numbers that he put up. Like, bro, like there's a dozen quarterbacks in the NFL that would have put up better numbers than what Tua put up. You can't just look at that and say, not Skylar Thompson. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater was close, though. No one's thinking Teddy Bridgewater is top 30 quarterback. I mean, come on. You know, you can point to all the numbers you want. Just watch the games. You cannot possibly tell me that Tua was a top 15 quarterback. It's just he underthrew damn near every ball. He was late on damn near every throw, but these guys were just unbelievable, in terms of, we're talking about the two receivers there they got in South Beach, man. So I don't know. I'm firmly of the thought that I think Tua can be a fine pro. I'm not saying he's the worst quarterback in the league. That's certainly not what I'm saying. I just think when you're saying, oh, he's a top, he could be, I guess what I start having conniptions when people say, oh, look at the numbers. This guy's clearly an MVP candidate. It's like, are you really? Are we watching the same game? Like, get out of here with this. That's when I start really having problems with it. But no, I agree with that. I think he can be an above average quarterback and certainly, kind of take them, maybe guide them and be a game manager and do the things that they need to get done there. But look, if you could get Lamar, or hell, even if you can get Tom Brady, I think that's an upgrade at the quarterback position, and that would be a lot of fun.
Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Perception, the show. Now, James Coe and Matt Harmon.
I think the big storyline for us is that Reception Perception had a big data drop, as I mentioned. And I just want to get right into it because staying in the state of Florida, the Jacksonville Jaguars got Calvin Ridley reinstated by the league. And now he joins a core, pass catching core of Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, and Evan Engram, who the team franchise tag. I can't believe Evan Ingram's going to be a top five paid tight end in the NFL in 2023, but here we are. So walk me through what you found with Calvin Ridley, because obviously it's a pretty small sample size.
Yeah, small sample size, five games in 2021. You know, I obviously did not do his 2021 sample when he was suspended last year because I got a lot of other stuff going on. So no need for that. But I went ahead and did it as we're leading in here because he's going to get reinstated. As you mentioned, he was reinstated. Yep. So I think going into those five games is interesting because I think there is a narrative that, oh, Ridley had a great season in 2020, he had 1,300 yards, but, you know, he had all these great years, even these great reception perception data points when Julio Jones is playing for the Falcons. Never mind that Julio Jones was, like, barely playing in 2020. He played in nine games. Ridley essentially already, I think, had graduated to the number one receiver role that year. But there, and then some of Ridley's, you know, fake news counting stats were not as good in 2021 or 2021 when he played last. So I think there was I'm 100% leaning into that. The rest of the, I'm sorry if it bothers people, it shouldn't bother you, but wide receiver stats are fake news. They'll be referred to fake news stats on this show, on my Twitter feed, and everywhere else going forward. Sorry if it bothers
you. For you.
The reality, but anyways, the reality is, like, you look at the stats from 2021 for Ridley, and they are, you know, his targets are there, but, like, the catches aren't that, the catch rate, the yards per target, stuff like that, not that great. But, man, I mean, you watch him play again, like you said, don't look at the numbers, look at the game film. The reception perception data backs it up. 76.4% success rate versus man coverage. That's right in line with where he was in 2020, 80.5% success rate versus zone, 75% success rate versus press. Again, the numbers in 2020, 76%, 81.5%, and 75.6%. Those are all right there around those same numbers. He's still a guy that wins incredibly fast off the line of scrimmage. I mean, absurd success rate on slants, curls, but also on nine routes, post routes. I've said this on the show before. I've said it in other places before. I have tried to remain cautiously optimistic about Calvin Ridley and not, like, get too enthusiastic because he spent damn near 2 years away from football. Right. But then you go back and watch him play and you're like, that's exactly the guy that the Jacksonville Jaguars need in their wide receiver room, James. So I'm trying to not get too excited about it. But again, the player that he is, I think, perfectly complements a Christian Kirk in the slot and Evan Engram as a move, stretch the field, horizontal type of tight end. You know, if he's anywhere close to this level of player, and again, not the player in 2020, the player in 2021, the guy who he still was before he left the team.
Right.
I mean, that's a great ad for the Jaguars.
So in 2020, the guy compiled 1,374 yards and 90 receptions, right? And averaged 15.3 yards per reception. So when folks were talking about a little bit of a downturn for Calvin Ridley in 2021, it's because he goes from 91 yards per game to 56 yards per game. He goes from a 63% catch rate to a 59% catch rate, and he goes from a 15.3 yards per reception average to a 9.1 yards per reception average. But Matt, what you are telling us is, again, ignore those counting stats, watch what this guy does at the line of scrimmage. And what you charted was that in 2021, his numbers looked almost identical to the breakout season that he had in 2020.
Correct. Yes. I think there was really no drop off from him as an individual player, a separator. Now an area where he definitely struggles, I don't want to say that Calvin Ridley's like a perfect receiver. I think, like, his separation numbers are right off of the elite tier. You know, if you tick all of these numbers up 3-4 percentage points, then we're talking about the best receivers in the league. I think you know, Ridley's a step down from that. One area where he's definitely not great is he's not a contested catch guy. And I think that was some of the stuff that we saw early in that 2021 season. Clunked his way to a 40% contested catch rate in 2021. He's never cleared 70% in any of his pro seasons. He's a skinny guy. That's not his game. You know, I mean, he's a poor tester in the vertical jump. A lot of his combine numbers look very similar to a guy like Jordan Addison this past year, you know, a rookie I'm excited to take a look at. So those are some of the concerns with Ridley as a player. And I think maybe what takes him from being a really good number one receiver and keeping him there as opposed to him being a top 10 elite wide receiver. But man, again, a guy that wins that fast off the line of scrimmage can separate like that. Jaguars just didn't have anybody like that last year, despite the good play they got from like a guy like Zay Jones. He's not that type of player either. So I think they could use like maybe one more big contested catch ball winner type to kind of round out the receiver core. But yeah, Ridley, I don't think dropped anything from there. By the way, like we saw what Matt Ryan was this year with the Colts, right? You know, right. I mean, that was his quarterback in 2021.
Correct.
Let me just tell you some of these, like, why is the yards per target so low? Why is the catch rate so low? I'm just saying Matt Ryan wasn't like completely ready for the glue factory like he was with the Colts last year, but he was certainly ready to be taking a few steps back as a player in 2021, which I think is a partial responsibility for these numbers here.
I think it's interesting too, what he's able to do short and then long, right? Where he has a, you know, 93.1% success rate on slants, 97% success rate on curls, but then you flip it to the nines and the posts, right? Like he's got a 78% success rate on the nine route and a 71% success rate on the post route. Those are what an interesting combination of numbers that is for Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, such a good player. Again, I think he is, and this is all like a year and a half ago, basically, the player was that we're talking about. So we do truly have no idea what he's going to come back to be. And it sounds like based on, you know, his Twitter feed and everything he said publicly, he's very excited to get back to football and very excited to be playing with the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's great. So like, let's just hope the mindset is there. But again, the player that we last saw, like he is in that Stephon Diggs axis of players. He's a step below Stephon Diggs, like I mentioned, but like Terry McLaurin, Steph Diggs, these guys, you know, Devontae Smith, these outside the numbers, like flanker receivers or high end X receivers at times, like he can be that guy. And that's like, again, the ability to win short, as you mentioned, the ability to snap back to the quarterback, that's crucial. And again, you just look at the routes that a guy like Christian Kirk is running as a slot receiver. They're totally different than what this guy is going to do from a vertical standpoint. I mean, Christian Kirk can stretch the field from the slot, but those outside the numbers throws that like Zay Jones is leaving on the field. I mean, Marvin Jones, those play.
Right.
So think about some of those shot plays that Trevor Lawrence has taken to Marvin Jones last year. Those are going to be Calvin Ridley on the other end of those throws. That's exciting.
Yeah, it really is. You talk about a clear need for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Listen, when you can get a guy who can go outside and play, he's a value add to every team. But in particular for this team, the Jacksonville Jaguars, with an emerging up-and-coming quarterback gunslinger in Trevor Lawrence, boy, that is really exciting. If Calvin Ridley has his mind right, if he's got his physicals right, if this guy is both healthy mentally and physically and he's ready to play, you drop him into this ecosphere, Matt, and all of a sudden everyone else can play the role that they're probably best suited to play, right? Christian Kirk can play a little bit of flanker, a lot of it as a slot man. Zay Jones can be that, you know, rotational piece as a flanker player as well. And again, you add Evan Ingram into the mix, who clearly Trevor Lawrence trusted and leaned on at the tight end position. But everyone just snaps into their more natural positions if Calvin Ridley is right. But I hear you. That's a big if. The dude hasn't played football in about a year and a half, man. Let's see what he's got.
This is Reception Perception, the show. Now, James Coe and Matt Harmon.
All right, we're going to flip it to, well, Calvin Ridley came from the NFC South. We'll stay there in the NFC South, and we'll talk about the Saints here. Obviously, the big storyline for them is the fact that they signed Derek Carr. A no trade clause again for Derek Carr. Good for him. Good for him. No trade clause again. It's amazing. You know, Derek Carr. And you know, I don't mean to, you know, I'm not trying to bag on Carr or anything, but it's like, it's not like he's an elite player, you know, but he's certainly gotten elite treatment with his contracts, which I think has been good for him. Good for him to finesse that, man. 4 years, 150, more like a 2-year deal, 2 or 3-year deal for the Saints. But I think a very reasonable deal for the Saints. I think it's a good deal for Derek Carr. But again, that no trade clause again, man, he gets to basically dictate where he goes at the end of this contract if he decides to do that again. Anyways,
How'd you feel about the Saints? Like, how'd you feel though about just on the Carr thing? You know, because I know we've talked about it before on the show, like, you know, the NFC South and all. I think we both really liked Carr as a fit here. And, yes. You know, some people have feelings about this is a bad team building move. Like, the Saints need to start over. They need to rebuild. I mean, what are you going to do? Like, you're really going to blow this entire thing up? Like, and like, they've been kicking this roster. They've been kicking the can down the road on this roster for so long, maxing out their credit card bills for so long. Their tax guy gets their papers here in a couple weeks, and it's a nightmare. The tax forms for the New Orleans Saints. Like, are you really just going to, it's over. Like, you traded up for Chris Olave. And now you're just going to stop trying, you know, like, I think it was an imperfect solution. It was kind of a perfect solution for an imperfect team, basically, because Carr is going to give you what definitely top 15 quarterback play. And he's easily the best quarterback in the division. I don't know. What did you feel about their decision to actually just go ahead and make this move?
Well, they can still win the division. I mean, the division's so weak. They can just go out there and win the division. So again, I think it's a good move for them. They have an aging roster. I don't even think they've got pieces to move unless it's on the defensive side of the football or on the offensive line, which I don't think they want to do. Right. So they could move some pieces on the defensive side. Cam Jordan, I think, obviously would garner a lot of interest. But again, it's an aging offensive roster. I mean, even guys like Alvin Kamara, first of all, what's his status? Offensively,
we don't know.
Maybe a suspension might be coming. I don't know, right? But even he is, I hate to say, because I think he's like, 28 years old or whatever. But he's certainly, you know, he's like in his prime, like right now. But
didn't have a very good year last year.
He didn't have a great year last year. But I think that's the offensive play calling. For me, I'm not sure why Alvin Kamara, you're trying to jam him inside and have him be a between the tackles runner. To me, that doesn't matter. Why are you not throwing the ball to one of the
David
best pass
Johnson
catching
on passing downs?
Like, why are we doing this, Saints? I don't know. He's literally one of your best offensive players. You're putting him in a position where he cannot succeed. So I don't understand. Anyways. Neither here nor there, but he's got, you know, let's say he's got 2 years left as a prime time player. Okay. Well, that lines up with Derek Carr, does it not? Again, Jarvis Landry is there. Michael Thomas is there, who we'll get to in just a moment. But they also have an emerging superstar in Chris Olave. I think they're maybe a couple offensive, maybe one offensive lineman away from really securing that offense. And actually, to be honest with you, Matt, I actually think if Derek Carr is a top 15 to top 12 quarterback, this team's not that far away offensively from actually being, I don't want to say a championship team because they're just not there, but certainly an interesting team, a playoff team. And again, not just because they're playing in the NFC South, but like a legitimate NFC playoff team.
Well, you just look across the NFC, like I think Rodgers is probably not playing for Green Bay this year. Just the amount of quarterback questions in the NFC. I don't mind these teams like the Giants or the Saints saying like, hey, let's try to just push this in the next 2 years. Like we'll pay. Normally, I don't love paying for competency at quarterback, but these two teams have done and the Seahawks too with Geno Smith, although I think Geno was better than both of those guys last year
for sure,
especially early on in the season. Like, let's just pay for competency, try to build up the rest of the roster and just go for it, like, because the NFC is so watered down right now. I kind of can understand that calculus at this point. And with Carr specifically, like, I know that there are some people, especially, you know, stat dorks and fantasy heads, and will immediately point to like, well, but look at Andy Dalton and all of these metrics last year. He played really well. He was like a PFF grade darling. You know, he was really good.
He was really good at a bunch of
advanced metrics. I would counter that by saying one,
watch
probably because he was throwing to it. Well, yeah, for obviously,
first of all, watch the games, dude. Right.
Yeah. First of all, he was, we'll talk about it here in a second, but he was throwing to a guy who was almost always open in Chris Olave. We'll talk about him in a second. And number two, that probably helps your PFF grade and all that stuff. And two, if Andy Dalton was quarterback 25 in any of those metrics next year, would you be surprised at all? No, I think with Derek Carr,
right,
you're paying for like a little bit more certainty than Andy Dalton on the back nine of his career. There's a familiarity there with the head coach. So yeah, Andy Dalton was good. Like, that's why because Andy Dalton was good last year, functional last year, I should say.
Yeah. I was like, let's slow a roll. NFL, let's slow a roll and good.
He was, I mean, remember our late great friend Chris Wessling always had the Dalton scale. I think he was perfectly Dalton scale last year. He was the prime meridian of NFL quarterbacks last year, was Andy Dalton. So because that's why I'm not going to go out and say like, oh, this is a massive upgrade for like fantasy for like Chris Olave. But again, it's just paying for certainty, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, you're right. You're 100% right in that Andy Dalton at any point could just fall apart. You know what I mean? Especially with his age right now. But okay, let's get right into it. Chris Olave, I feel like, having read a lot of your stuff before, this is a player that you are extremely, extremely excited about. Am I correct in saying that?
Love this guy.
There it is. There it is.
Yeah. I mean, he's awesome. And you know, this is a player that in last year's draft class, reception perception really showed that he was a dude, that he was a guy, he was a dog, right? Like, he was someone that I think, you know, in different circles was doubted a little bit because he was teammates with Garrett Wilson. He was teammates with Jackson Smith and Jigba. He was he was a dreaded, you know, he wasn't an early declare. That's a big red flag and stuff like that. But you just watched him play, and this was reflected in reception perception. He was a stone cold stud. I mean, a route runner that you just don't see at the college level. So advanced, such a good technician, and could also lift the lid. Like, he could take the top off a defense too. And all of that translated immediately. I mean, again, for people that are new to the website, even old subscribers too, this is a new thing I'm doing this year that, like, because this free agent class is so boring and like, I'm not trying to say, hey, we just dropped a bunch of content. Here's a, you know, check out Paris Campbell, Mecole Hardman, Darius Slayton. It's like, okay, well, if a quarterback change happens, like this Carr thing, let's throw up the Chris Olave profile. So it's up on the site right now, and it's awesome. I mean, he's a guy that wins at all three levels of the field. I mean, just an incredible rookie season. We know that. 75.8% success rate versus man coverage, 77.5% success rate versus press. That's, you know, that's stud level stuff. That's the stuff that, like, when you see guys being, you know, over that 80th percentile in both of the, you know, success rate versus press and success rate versus man, and also can beat zone coverage at an above 80% rate. You know, those are your Terry McLaurin types. Those are your, you know, obviously, if he continues to grow, he could be like a Stephon Diggs type. That was a player I comped him to based on reception perception. I love this guy, dude. He's so good. I still feel like he's a little bit underrated just in terms of how good he is. You know, he didn't really get
for sure he is, dude.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think? I'm not being crazy, am I?
No. You're 100% right. We actually talked about this on the show a little bit because he's so good. He's so productive right out the gates. And it's like, we didn't see a lot of headlines regarding Chris Olave. And my theory is that we just didn't see a lot of, well, first of all, he didn't have a lot of touchdowns, right? So like, that's one.
Yeah.
And so, and the other one is, I just, what is like that signature catch that Olave had? I don't think he had a lot of those, oh wow, moments. You know, like George Pickens is on the literal opposite end of the spectrum. You know, it's like,
didn't
make a lot of plays, but when he made plays, like half of them were like, oh my God, like, geez, what a catch from Pickens, right? And I think Olave fits more into that, just like, dude, the guy's just so open. He doesn't have to make those catches, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
And I think that kind of sort of, you're right. Like, why didn't he get more love for, like, you know, AP Rookie of the Year or whatever it was? He probably should have, right? So like, he was so productive, for God's sakes. I mean, the dude had over 1,000 yards as a rookie. Come on, dude. Like, the guy was amazing. Yeah. He was great.
And he was pretty consistent throughout the entire season, too. And again, we're talking about him, I think, elevating Andy Dalton to be like PFF's sixth best quarterback or whatever it is. So right. I think Andy Dalton owes a lot of that PFF cred to Chris Olave always being open. Another thing I think people don't appreciate about Olave, and they're right about this, is, you know, he's got a lot of flack for not being a yak receiver in college. He's not a yak receiver in the pros. And you're right. Those are the type of plays, not even just catches, but like, you know, Deebo Samuel gets a slant and houses it for 57 yards and people,
Jalen,
you know,
Waddle,
just go crazy, right? And I get it, because that stuff's super impressive and that's part of playing wide receiver. Chris Olave was brought down on first contact on 82.4% of his in-space attempts in reception perception. That is not his game. But look at his route tree. He ran a slant. This is, by the way, bonkers stuff. He ran a slant on 7.4% of his routes in reception perception. And he's still getting open at that insane rate. That, like, he's not running these little Mickey Mouse routes and then like, oh, let me break two tackles to get 14 yards. He's running a dig route, getting wide ass open. He's got 14 yards at the catch point. So it's different styles of wide receivers. Again, like, what's more impressive, the guy catches a little Mickey Mouse route and breaks two tackles and runs for 14 yards, or the guy has, you know, pristine, perfect technique, beats press coverage, man coverage, zone coverage, whatever it is, runs the dig route and catches 14 or an out route, 14 yards right there. The quarterback has a wide open window to throw it. I would argue that there are just two ways to do it, but that technique is so impressive, and that's what makes Olave a great player. And I think, you know, the throws that Derek Carr and Devontae Adams were so in sync on last year. You know, Adams had his highest yards per catch of his entire career last year with Carr. Those dig routes, those out routes, those intermediate routes, I think that's going to be a big part of this connection going forward.
Right. So to your point, nearly 40% of his routes were corner, nine, or post, right? So we're talking about going long.
Wild.
That is in today's NFL. When you're talking about number one wide receiver, that is pretty nuts. You know what I mean? Like, that's more reserved for like specialty dudes, you know, like specialty over the top guys. But that's not what Olave was. Like, Olave is like a legitimate number one running,
yeah, guys,
you know, 37%
that
over the top.
Guys that do that then don't have like a 75% success rate versus man coverage. That,
right.
I don't know that a lot of guys in RP history have route trees like this, but I would venture to, if I went back and looked, like, guys that are running 40% downfield routes, I would venture that he's probably the only one that has a success rate this high.
Wow.
That's just bonkers stuff.
Yeah, it's craziness to me. Okay, so you bring up the Stephon Diggs comp. Also, when you look at his route tree, by the way, to see his full route tree, obviously go to the website, receptionperception.com. But to see his full route tree, it's almost all green. Matt, again, I've gone through a lot of your stuff. Can you remember a rookie that was like this? Like, he has been crazy successful, almost an entirely green route tree as a rookie. There are not that many examples of this through the hundreds of guys that you've charted.
Yeah, I'd have to maybe go back to like Odell Beckham's rookie year. You know, that obviously was in 2014. That is long before I wasn't even doing color coded charts back in reception 2014.
So
I'd maybe have to go back to that. That's definitely a contender for maybe a full green rookie route tree, because he literally Beckham still has the third best success rate versus man coverage score in reception perception history from that rookie year. He still holds, which is just insane. He still holds the record for success rate versus press coverage from that rookie year. You know, that might be the closest one. Justin Jefferson's rookie year, I'd have to look at that one, but that actually is probably the closest. Yeah, I'm going and looking at it right now. Justin Jefferson's 2020 profile on our website, receptionperception.com. He's got two red routes, out route, flat route, just struggling turning left, I guess. But Justin Jefferson, I think.
Okay.
Although, you know, I can obviously run an out route from the other side of the field. I get it. I'm just making a joke there. But that's probably the closest one in terms of a rookie season that's comparable. His success rates are better. His success rate versus press is higher, 96th percentile for Justin Jefferson's success rate versus press there. But yeah, that's probably the closest one, like to an all green route tree that we've got there. It'd be Olave and Jefferson in terms of like recent RP history.
The reason that's so impressive and the reason I bring it up, it's that most receivers that we talk about, they have roles, right? They have certain tools, they have certain skills, they have certain physical attributes that allow them to do well in certain roles. It's very rare to see a player do well everywhere. Those are the kind of players that are what we would call special players. Chris Olave, as a rookie, showing me green almost everywhere, again, right out the jump. I don't know, man. There is something interesting about that. And I know you're excited about it, but I'm certainly interested to see what year two will bring for Chris Olave. Can we flip it to the other side? Now, a player that is well beyond his rookie year and well beyond his prime of his career, it's his running mate, Michael Thomas. Just a three-game sample here in 2022. But boy, it's not looking great for the once great Michael Thomas.
Funny, Michael Thomas, you know, he was a guy that we did an in-season tracking profile on this year.
Yeah.
And so when I was like, you know what, he might get cut. I'll probably put a profile up on him just in case he gets cut and added this free agent group. I was like, all right, well, I got three games from 2022. How many do more? Don't need to add anymore. That's it.
He's done. He's done.
He's done. Right. He's done at three games. So
hold on.
Yeah, to be fair, three games is such a small sample. You know, normal perception samples are eight games. I mentioned, like, let's have a caveat for Calvin Ridley earlier in the show on five games. Three is nothing. But in those three games, I definitely think we saw a declining player. Like, to be fair for Michael Thomas, like, I just mentioned Odell Beckham was up there in the third best success rate versus man coverage score of all time. Number two is actually Michael Thomas in 2018, the year prior to his record breaking campaign. You know, this is like 89%. He was sixth best in success rate versus zone coverage all time. Like, this was one of the best separators that we've seen play recently. 2022. A year and a half basically away from football, a full year away. 2020 was even an injury wrecked season.
Right.
Not so much. Now he's like 34th percentile success rate versus man, 17th percentile success rate versus zone. Still pretty good press coverage scores. And he was running like more downfield routes, only 15.5% slant route rate in 2022. But still could get open on those slant routes, the flat routes. But yeah, pretty much anything in that like intermediate area. He was really just more of a contested catch threat, which is, he was a really great contested catch receiver. He saw a contested target on 39% of his looks from weeks one to three and caught 88.9% of those targets. So
that's wild.
Which is wild.
That's good. That is so good.
And remember like him in the first 3 weeks of the season, winning with Jameis Winston on like red zone plays, in those like scoring areas. He was good in that area. So I think for Michael Thomas, I'm not ready to say he's like totally cooked. Although, again, he was hurt again last year. Who knows? I think if the Saints keep him around, it will be because they want him as a complimentary player, a guy to win in the red zone, a guy to almost be sort of like what people thought Michael Thomas was going to be coming into the pro game. Short routes, slant flat, contested plays. Maybe some more big slot stuff. Cause really right now they have Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed, who I liked the flashes from Shaheed in his reception perception sample.
Same.
But those are small guys. Olave's skinny. Shaheed's tiny. Thomas would, I think, give them a little more size if they decided to keep him around.
I'm so interested in Shaheed, man. I watch this guy play. He just makes plays, dude. I like this dude. You know, and you talk about the route running ability of Michael Thomas as well. Obviously, did not flash that in 2022. By the way, the guy's only played 10 games amassed over his last three seasons combined. He played seven games in 2020, missed all of 2021, and then played three games in 2022. So, look, obviously, injuries have sapped him. But the knowledge up top, the knowledge in his brain, that I think he could impart on some of these younger guys too. I don't know if he's that kind of teammate. I don't know if he is or not, but if he is, certainly he could impart some knowledge on some of these younger dudes too. And boy, that would be really helpful, I think, for some of these younger up-and-coming wide receivers they've got in Saints uniforms for sure. Listen, there's a full-on data drop on receptionperception.com. I want you to go check it out. There's a ton of players that have been updated and uploaded to the site. By the way, we are very close. We're inching our way towards a total site redesign, and it's kind of sort of we're soft launching that pretty soon here, I want to say, in the next week or two. We should hopefully see some movement there, but that's pretty exciting stuff, obviously. But again, we hit on some guys here, but listen, there is a bunch more on the website, and we're going to be getting into that in next week's podcast as well, where Matt, I would imagine, is also going to have some combine takes, and some of these incoming rookie dudes will have some data on them as well, and we'll pick, of course, Matt's brain on all those guys. Can they run a little bit faster for me, though? That would be nice.
Sure you were just like, this is your worst combine ever.
These guys are slow. Running backs are running faster than these wide receivers, man. Like, what's going on here? I don't get it.
Smith and Jigba just like, I'm not running a 40. No thanks, James Coe. So, yeah.
How am I supposed to base my takes on a non-40 wide receiver? Like, what's happening? I can't do it. We do have a website for that, by the way, receptionperception.com. But yeah, we're going to get into some of those combine takes, get into, obviously news of the day and some more of these, guys that we've charted, as well on next week's episode. But if you guys would like and subscribe to the show, that would be very much appreciated. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. See ya.